People, I firmly believe that people that don't possibly have a drinking problem ever consider going to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. A normal drinker never thinks about Alcoholics Anonymous or thinks that they might need help with their problem. And you should just go and try it because if it's not the right place for you, you're going to know it in 5 minutes. And if you walk in and suddenly you think, oh, it's not just me, then you're in the right place. There's nothing to be lost by going to a meeting at all, ever.
I heard it through the grapevine.
Welcome. It's the AA Grapevine Half Hour Variety Hour featuring the collected voices of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm Sam, an alcoholic in Palm Springs, California.
And I'm Alice, an alcoholic still in transition.
You know, Alice, it doesn't matter where you are to me, as long as you know where your feet are. And that you have a good, strong internet connection.
I need a good, strong internet connection to be in transition.
Alice, we've gotten a lot of listener feedback lately. Here's one of them. We received this voicemail from Jerry.
Hi again, folks. This is Jerry, alcoholic from Kelowna, British Columbia, Canada. I wanted to share another one with you. Things heard at a meeting. A newcomer was sharing at a meeting in the last couple of months about how they had just completed their step four, and they were reviewing it with their sponsor. The individual looks up and to all of us at the meeting and says, wow, somebody should have said something. And it just made us all break out in laughter for some reason, this revelation that comes with working the steps. Thanks again for the great work you do on the podcast. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Jerry. I just love that. You know, I often think, you know, when I'm surprised by something at Alcoholics Anonymous, I probably have heard that 1,000 times, but I can only hear in my level of understanding, right? So for a newcomer, they're like, why didn't you tell me?
Yeah.
We have been saying it over and over.
But you know, that's what the thing is about all this too. That knowledge alone doesn't serve us in this. It's the action. It's not until I've done that fourth and fifth step that I can really grasp what you get from it.
Yeah. What it is with skin on it. Like, what does it look like in the real world? Because I can read it in the book and it feels one way. But when I experience it, you know, these are not the steps we read and talked about. These are the steps we took.
What a wonderful delineation there. I love that.
Yeah. I took that from Spiritual Gangsters, an AA meeting.
Oh, I think we might need to check that one out.
I know. I want to say we appreciate all of the feedback from our listeners. We also received listener feedback in an email from Jack A.
Jack writes, just wanted to comment regarding Alice's comment regarding big book study groups. While she may be correct in that the modern style of big book study can possibly be traced to Joe and Charlie, there is a long history of big book study groups since the early 1940s. For example, search AA historian Wally P's writings regarding the early groups in Minneapolis, as well as Silkworth.net that states that big book studies became popular in the 1960s. Joe and Charlie didn't do their first big book study until 1977. So while the big book study as we know it today wasn't popular until the 1980s, perhaps from Joe and Charlie's influence, there is a long history of big book study type groups dating back to as early as the 1940s. Jack A. in Suffield, Connecticut.
I love this from Jack. You know, one of the beauties of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm not talking about attending meetings, I'm talking about belonging to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, is this never-ending learning, right? Like, I think of big book studies as like in vogue, like popular, they're everywhere now. And they didn't used to be. But Jack rightly points out that doesn't mean they didn't exist at all. In little pockets across the country, they did exist. Perhaps across the globe, they existed. So thank you, Jack. Keep us honest and keep us learning.
Thanks so much, Jack. Hey, Alice, who's our guest today?
So today we're going to be talking to Kristen P. from Ashburn, Virginia. And after we get to know her a bit, we'll see if we can interest her in some of the discussion that we're going to have based on hashtag heard in a meeting posts.
Hi,
Hi, folks. We need your stories on the individual traditions. Pick one and write about your or your group's experience with it. How has a tradition played a part in your life? How has your understanding of a tradition changed? What is a personal experience where a tradition played a part? Visit aagrapevine.org for guidelines and to submit.
Hi, my name is Kristen and I am an alcoholic. My sobriety date is August 18th, 2002. So I will celebrate 22 years of continuous sobriety this year. I have a sponsor. She is into a lot of service, actually sits on the Grapevine board. My home group is the Start the Week Off Right meeting at Club 12 in Leesburg, Virginia. We meet at 9 a.m. on Sunday mornings. Did you need anything else?
I think the mother's maiden name and blood type and social security number. And parole officer.
Oh, yeah, my parole officer. Yeah, he's on vacation this week, so we don't need to worry about him.
Kristen, thank you so much for joining us and playing along with us.
Thank you for having me.
Kristen, what was going on in your life in 2002 that would have you do something as drastic as go to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting?
Yeah.
Well, so it started, I actually got arrested for DUI. I was 23. I ended up not getting convicted, but it was 8 more years of drinking and blacking out and just disasters. My life was not great. I actually tried to get sober in January of 2002. Mm-hmm. And I went to meetings for about 6 months. And the guy that I was dating was not an alcoholic, but didn't love Alcoholics Anonymous. He thought it took too much time. I've said in meetings, I think he thought that it was a dating service, that I was going to go to meetings and meet a guy. Mm. So I did not attend meetings for 6 months and I didn't drink for 6 months.
Oh, I'm sure you were a bundle of joy during that time.
It was awesome.
It was awesome. Horrible. My knuckling, it is always awesome.
Oh, New Year's Eve 2002. I just remember being so dreadful. And then I broke up with said guy. I was going to start dating people and I was 31. And I thought adults would go out to dinner and have a glass of wine. That's what adult people did. Right. So, I started drinking again, and I can name the occasions for 5 of the 6 blackouts that I had once a month for the 6 months that I drank in that period. But I had started dating someone else, and the last night that I drank was a blackout and just inappropriate behavior. I was supposed to be the designated driver that night, so that worked out super great for them.
Yeah,
I could not drive anywhere, and I embarrassed him in front of his friends. And so he had a conversation with me and said, you know, I think you need to stop drinking. I can tell you that that whole day before that night happened, I knew I was drinking like an alcoholic. Mm-hmm. And so it was almost a relief when he put words to it so that I could say, oh, thank God I can stop now. Mm-hmm. So I called the woman who had been my sponsor before, and that all happened on a Saturday. I went to my first meeting on Thursday night, and I've been sober ever since.
Wow.
I will say part of the story is about 9 months later, I went through the same thing with this guy and so many meetings and too much time. And you know, that was the first time that I knew that I was going to have to put my sobriety first. And I put it first, and he and I stopped seeing each other. 6 months later, I met the guy that became my husband. And
so has it absolutely ruined your life by putting your sobriety first?
No, but I did. When I first got sober, I thought it was going to be horrible. I thought I was going to sit at home on Saturday nights and stare at the wall. How did people live or socialize or do anything and not drink? How did you watch football? How did you whatever? And I, met my husband through friends. I had actually gotten to a point in my life before I met him that if my path was going to be being single and not having kids and just being an aunt to my niece, then I was okay with that. And then I met him and, you know, he's not an alcoholic. He does not understand the alcoholic brain at all. There are times he looks at me and is like, I just don't understand what happens in that head. I like to tell the story that he and I went on a trip. We had been dating for about 2 months, and I won't bore you with the whole thing, but it was like 3 days in a row that we tried to find a meeting for me. Mm-hmm. This house was like up on a mountain past state maintenance. We had to go down the hill and didn't find the meeting two nights in a row, back up the hill. The third night, finally, we had the meeting. They had one meeting a day at 6 p.m. I go to the meeting. He's in the car, truck, whatever. He has the dogs with him, reading a book, just hanging out. And I came out of the meeting and I got back in the car and he looked at me and said, do you want to come back tomorrow? And he looked at me and he said, I don't understand what happens in those rooms, but you're better when you've been there. And like at that moment, I was like, okay, well, I found the right guy. yeah, he's been amazingly supportive and will kind of look at me and go, do you need to talk to your sponsor? Have you not been to enough meetings? Which, you know, at times I just want to be like, you don't get it. None of your business. but it really, I really do believe that because I had let go entirely of the outcome.
Yeah.
That was how that happened.
Yeah. It's funny because so much of how many of us are socialized is around drinking. Everybody that I knew drank. I started drinking really young. And like you, I couldn't imagine life without drink. Like my life, I didn't realize it until I stopped drinking, was structured around drinking. I thought everybody's life was like that. But what happens when we start drinking against our will, which is what I heard you mm-hmm. say, right? I'm drinking and I don't want to, which is, it's a living hell. The people around us that are not supportive of us being well and us being whole and us being free, they're not the right people for us. And if we just accept that and move on, beautiful, beautiful things will happen.
It's interesting because I know that after I got sober, my life started changing. As crazy and sort of not great as it sounds, my mom and my sister both, there was a piece of them that was like, because I think I was the one that they held their lives up against. Like, we're not that bad, so we're okay.
Oh, yeah,
we know that.
And then all of a sudden, I was not that bad anymore.
Yeah.
And it was not that they would have wanted me not to be, but it was an uncomfortable transition for them to be like, you're not the same.
Yeah.
You're
well,
not.
There's always a family order, right? There's a pecking order. That's the deal in my family. I was the most likely to not succeed. And so when I got sober at 26 and I built this incredible life, they're like, wait a minute, that's not the role you're supposed to be in.
You're doing it wrong. We didn't plan it this way for you.
But how great for them, right? Like I'm imagining your sister and your mom, people in my life had to step their game up.
Yeah.
Right? Because if I was going to be low man on the totem pole, you needed to step your game up because now I'm walking in the light.
And that has changed obviously over the last 20 years.
You know, a thing that instantly pops to mind for me about this is my relationship with my mother. Several years into my recovery, my mother was having some problems in life. I was a good son and I shared what I could. My mother was not an alcoholic and she did not have a 12-step program and she did not do any of that type of stuff. And she did not have the tools in her toolkit that I have in mine. Yeah. And trying to share some of that with her just was not, it wasn't going to work. And it was that point of having to let my mother have her own experience and me not try to change it for her. That was a difficult lesson to learn.
That's hard. You know, Kristen, you've got a sponsor that is both feet in, right? She's actually active in Grapevine, right? She's on serving on the board. So that means you know a little bit about the difference between being in a meeting and being in the program. So can you talk about over the last 20 years, how your recovery has changed?
Well, because I was a binge drinker, I think it's hard for everybody. I think at times it's harder for binge drinkers because we have periods where we're not drinking.
Yeah.
My life was a mess, but it kind of looked okay on the surface, you know? And so it was easy to
pretend you're functional.
Sort of. before my current sponsor, I had a sponsor and she said to me, she said, you think you're a little bit alcoholic. And she said, being alcoholic is like being pregnant. You either are or you are not. There's no in between. But I did struggle for a bit. This story is a little bit embarrassing. It's humbling. But
well, that's the one we want to hear. We want to hear that one.
I used to go to meetings with a guy and he would introduce himself and say, hi, I'm so-and-so. And I have a disease that tells me I don't have a disease. And I would sit in meetings and think, that poor guy, he has a disease.
Right.
It's insanity.
Right.
To think that I didn't have the same disease as this guy. So when people ask me, how do you know you're an alcoholic? You think about like those detective questions, who, where, what, when, why. Mm-hmm. It's not about anything but the why. The why you drink is what separates the alcoholic from the regular drinker.
I'm bodily different than my fellows. I drink and I get thirsty.
Exactly. Normal people don't think about the why they're drinking ever.
Yeah.
They're drinking because it tastes good or they like it or whatever.
Or because they want a party.
Yeah. They want a party. Well, then right. There's the second part of our first step problem, right? The voice in my head, the voice that told you, oh, that poor guy, I don't have a disease. What are you talking about, ma'am?
Yeah. And so once I sort of crossed that threshold of understanding that I was just like everybody else, I was, you know, people say just another bozo on the bus. Mm-hmm. And my sponsor really opened my eyes about that, about how the entire group functions as a whole. Because really, when you think about it, well, first of all, to just think that there was Bill Wilson and he goes on this trip and he meets this other guy who, from what I understand, you know, not the best doctor in the world because he was performing surgery drunk.
And he was a proctologist. Let's just be clear about what kind of surgery he's performing.
Exactly. And the two of them get together and talk and then figure out we can help each other. And then they form this thing and it's now been 80, however many years, because I can't math on Sundays. And that it is run completely by drunks. We can't run our own lives. You know, two drunks can't decide where to go to dinner without fighting.
Yeah.
But we run this entire organization and make all these things happen. It is amazing.
It's a miracle.
It is. It is divinely inspired. And, it, you know, I am so grateful to people who do the work at the higher levels. Not too long after I got sober, I had kids. And so it's kind of been something that hasn't fit into my life as yet.
Yeah.
But I'm also thinking about what do I do once they, God willing, are gone somewhere else during the school year in a couple of years. And it might be time for me to step into that space.
Yeah, general service.
Where if I need to travel for the weekend, it's not a big deal to a conference or whatever. But, you know, she really opened my eyes to that we have a service manual. I took a trip to New York back in 2016 with my husband. She told me, you know, if you get a chance, you should go to GSO.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So I got on the subway from Grand Central and took it uptown. Once I figured out which way the train went to go uptown, very confusing, nothing like the metro in DC. And I went to GSO and it was amazing and mind-boggling. Just some of it to look at all of the historic artifacts that they have and the stuff from when it first started. And then they showed me this room that's just full of pamphlets and literature in all of these languages.
Yeah.
And that they just send out all over the world to help some guy who says, I think I have a problem.
So I would love to engage you, Kristen,
yes,
in some of the Heard It in a Meeting.
I would love to be a part of Heard in a Meeting.
Thank you.
It's time for hashtag Heard in a Meeting, where we scour the interwebs for your posts of cool things that you've heard in a meeting. Post them on social media with hashtag Heard in a Meeting, keeping in mind our tradition of anonymity, or email them to podcast@aagrapevine.org. Alice, what sort of hashtag Heard in a Meeting stuff do we have today?
Well, this one is not from the interweb. This one is from our listener, Carol R. Carol, thank you for sending this in. Carol writes, tell the truth today and it becomes a part of your past. Tell a lie today and it becomes part of your future. That is beautiful, Chris.
It really is. It sort of shot me right through the heart, I got to tell you, because there are times, even now, after all this time, that the thought runs across my head, do I really want to tell somebody what actually was going on or what actually happened? And, you know, if I think about that, I'm going to carry that into tomorrow. I might consider even more quickly to just go ahead and spit out the truth.
As I have spent time in recovery, lying has become a lot more uncomfortable than it used to be.
Well, it's gotten a lot more complicated for me, right? Like it used to be like, oh, let's shoot for just not opening our mouths and saying something that's not true, right?
Yep.
And then I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous that there's also the lie of omission, that I don't open my mouth and I don't say what's true. And I think that sometimes old timers do that in meetings. They say like, oh, everything's great. They don't tell the truth about certain trials and low spots. But the one that is most profound for me today in relationship to what Carol sent in is the lie that I tell myself, the delusion that I'm living in, right? And that one is, you know, in my 11-step practice, that question, was I dishonest? I have to think about what is the lie I'm telling myself? You can eat candy, Alice. As a diabetic, it's going to be okay. No, you can lay in bed and you can visualize exercise and lose weight. No, it's not true. But I will lie to myself.
Alice, yeah. Why you got to come for me like that?
I wasn't talking about you, Sam Bam.
Well, I mean, I totally heard you say Sam thinks he can eat candy. And we also got another one. This one is from listener Patrick N., addressed to #, heard in a meeting. Ooh, nice, Patrick, going old school there. Patrick writes, when I was drinking, I would feel angry, happy, afraid, or whatever, and look in my toolbox, and alcohol was the only thing in there. Alcohol was like duct tape.
It fixes everything.
Isn't that great?
I want to know how you know that it's a #, and not a #.
We just talked about honesty, didn't we, Christy?
We did.
I am honestly telling you that he wrote in the subject #, two words.
Oh, he wrote the words pound sign.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Now I get it. I was very confused how a # and a # were two different symbols.
So, yeah, alcohol, my God, alcohol was absolutely the hammer for every nail, screw, splinter, you know, board that needed to be. It was the only tool in my toolbox. Alcohol was for every problem. And every celebration and everything in between.
Absolutely. You know, the realization that alcohol created problems that I needed to drink to deal with, I couldn't hear that. But it, when you look back on it, when you get a little bit of time and you have good sponsorship, you can see that it's bad duct tape. It's not good duct tape.
It doesn't have a dark side and a light side. Maybe it starts off that way, but then the light side gets all dirty with...
No, the glue doesn't work on the duct tape.
Yeah. Wow, we could take this to so many ends. Kristen, what about your toolbox? Yeah.
The idea that, you know, even if someone said, hey, why don't you try to quit drinking? That was never a possible answer to any of these problems because it wasn't the alcohol. It had to be something else.
Well, it was you. Yeah. It was you.
Yeah. But I was never going to take the alcohol away.
Alcohol was the only thing that was making life tolerable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I always thought like it'll be better when I can get a few in if I could just take the edge off. And it's the lie, right? Going back to the delusion that I'm living in.
You just use some magic. Take the edge off.
Yeah.
See, that's the difference between me as an alcoholic and the average Joe out there that is not. Yeah, it would be nice to take the edge off and have this drink that'll do that, this magical elixir. Except for me, when I use that as that tool to take the edge off, I don't know where it's going to wind up. I don't know where it's going to end. I don't know if it's going to end. I don't know how my life is going to be changed by it. But that average Joe out there who takes that drink to take the edge off, or maybe two, maybe even three, his life doesn't get ruined by it.
No, they can stop.
Let's do one more. Alice, will you take the next one?
Sure. So another # heard in a meeting. Oh, said it right. Religion is for those who keep trying to stay out of hell. Spirituality is for those that have already been there. Man, I love that. This religion thing, like I'm going to follow the rules. I'm going to be a good girl. I'm going to, because I want to, you know, I want to stay out of hell. But man, when I get, when I drag myself and I've been through hell, then I start seeking the power in a completely different non-religious way. I want spirituality.
I've had interesting thoughts about this just very recently, as recent as last week. I have struggled at different points in my sobriety with the God of my understanding being the right God of my understanding for the time that I'm in. And for various reasons, the idea of a parent and a child or an upper and a lower, it just, it's not resonating for me right now because I haven't had great earthly examples. And so it's hard for me to imagine that thing that I can't see or touch. And so someone said to me the other day, well, what if it was like a partner? What if you were in partnership with your higher power? And I just went, my brain blew up. And I thought, I've had lots of different people in different ways in my life be partners, but from my husband to friends, my sponsor. And I can see that and I can see how it can work. And it really has changed a lot of things for me spiritually, just to open up that channel because I need it to be bigger now. When I got sober, I thought that it was going to be, I'd, you know, solve the problems and get better. And then I would just go on and I would just live and things would be fine. And then I've realized that it just gets deeper and harder kind of, but it just gets deeper and it's more work and it's, I have the benefit of seeing I've done this work and I've gotten this far and my life is this much that I want it to be. So if I go deeper, how big can it get next?
Infinite.
But my higher power has to come along and get bigger with that because I can't do it by myself.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I believe the problem that leads me to drink and the problem that I'm solving in Alcoholics Anonymous is a spiritual problem. So I can't fix a spiritual problem with a religious solution. I have to fix a spiritual problem with spiritual solution. And Alcoholics Anonymous says the conception that you have that will grow and change. I love that you use partnership.
Yeah, it was a complete change of perspective.
You've been just a delight.
Kristen, thank you. I've really enjoyed getting to know you.
Thank you guys for having me. This was so much fun.
Sam, can you get that? It's the listener feedback phone.
212-870-3418. Yeah, hang on. I'll get it.
Hello?
Hey, y'all. This is Matt from Boston, and I have what I think is an AA-related joke, and it goes like this. There are only two things an alcoholic hates: the way things are right now and change.
Hey, this is Chris. I'm a member of the Briarcliff Group of AA in New York. I have a joke for you. A drunk stumbles into a public library and he walks up to the circulation desk and says, "Give me a scotch and soda." The clerk says, "Sir, this is a library." And the drunk says, "Oh, so sorry. Give me a scotch and soda."
The Grapevine and Lavinia apps are now available for both iOS and Android phones.
To get yours, go to the App Store on your phone and search for AA Grapevine or Lavinia.
I'm at the very wit's end. Cuckoo.
A polar bear walks into a bar.
I'll take a rum and Coke.
What's with the paws?
Huh? I was born with them.
It's really not that funny. Thanks for joining us. The AA Grapevine Half Hour Variety Hour is posted every Monday and is produced by AA Grapevine, Inc. We don't speak for AA as a whole. We share the experience, strength, and hope of members to help others recover from alcoholism. Podcast info, including how to call in, is at aagrapevine.org/podcast. Search AA Grapevine in the App Store on your phone or find AA Grapevine on Instagram and YouTube. All things Grapevine are available at aagrapevine.org. If you want to know more about AA, search online for Alcoholics Anonymous in your city or visit aa.org.
That was freaking amazing.